Oh, perfecto, Miss Jennifer.
There we go, finally.
And well, so I'm going to get off the phone here. I'm going to mute myself, but we will again make sure you all know where you can access this recording again at some time. I'll make sure you have the web address, and then there's a telephone number. I can tell you what that is too. All right, so I'm going to mute myself too. Take it away, Miss Jennifer.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jennifer Wenzel. I now live in the great state of Minnesota, but I have lived in several states during my life. I was born in Watertown, Wisconsin in 1972, so those of you who are good with math can figure out that I'm 42. and when I was growing up, my mom decided when I was a baby, when she found out that I was blind, I was 7 months old when she found out I was blind, and she jokingly said that by then it was too late to treat me any differently than she had started treating me, which was just like she had been treating my brother. And so she decided that she needed to raise me as an independent person, someone who would be going out into the world and functioning as a person who would be contributing to society, not as a person who would be sheltered and, you know, living a life of dependence. So when I was a kid, she had me cooking and cleaning and doing chores and all those things that kids hate to do. And when I was a kid, I grumbled about it. But when I was an adult and now, I always look back on that, and I'm very, very grateful that she did that because it taught me a lot of things. And she didn't know a lot about alternative techniques of blindness. But she figured things out that she didn't know, and what she couldn't figure out, she would ask my vision teachers at school, or she would try to read, or some things she didn't have me do. She was always terrified of having me cook on a stovetop or having me put things into a hot oven. She was kind of worried about that kind of thing. But she did give me a lot of information and knowledge. And when I was older, I ended up going to Blind Incorporated in Minnesota to gain more skills, especially travel skills, because due to a lot of circumstances, I didn't get a lot of what they called orientation and mobility. For instance, I never traveled in the snow, and in Wisconsin, you get a lot of snow. So,
yes.
So,
how are you?
Keep going.
So if somebody could mute that would be helpful. So anyway, I gained a lot of information at Blind Incorporated as well. And I began to also teach, because when you learn, you teach. There's a saying about that, and I always forget what it is, but you learn it. I forget what it is, but you learn it and you teach it, and then you learn by teaching and you teach by learning and pass it on. So anyway, I've learned a lot by teaching what I have learned. And I've worked with a lot of different age groups, with young kids, with blind adults, with blind seniors, with teenagers. And I've gained a lot of knowledge from them, from each age group, from people I've worked with, and gained a lot of information from working with a lot of people. And what the more I learn and the more I work with people, it really comes down to a couple of different things. Simple is the best. That old thing of keep it simple, stupid is really the best thing. There are a lot of gadgets out there. There's a lot of stuff for blind people. Talking gadgets, braille gadgets, vibrating gadgets, a lot of gadgetry that you can get swamped with. Newly blinded people get swamped with it. Blind people that have been blind all their life get swamped with it. And some of them are useful. Some of them are not. Some of them are fun. But you don't need all of them. I mean, if you want some of them, great. If they're fun, great. If they're useful, great. But I really don't get into a lot of them. You don't need all of them to cook. Your kitchen as a blind person doesn't have to be a blind kitchen. It can be just a regular kitchen. You can go into any kitchen you want to and cook in it. You can help a friend who's had a surgery or had problems, or if you want to cook a meal at someone else's house, you should be able to do that with just a few alternative techniques or a few labeling techniques. you don't have to have a specially equipped, specially designed kitchen just because you've gone blind suddenly. Alternative isn't worse. It's just different. So touching your food to see if it's done doesn't mean that's an inferior technique. It's just a different technique. As long as you're hygienic about it and do it safely, you're going to be just as effective. I've never made anyone sick from my cooking. My husband can attest that you can survive on my cooking. My kids can attest that you can survive on my cooking. You know, but so many people think, oh, my gosh, I've lost my vision. I can't cook now. I'm going to have to live on TV dinners the rest of my life. That's not true. You know, people get scared. Oh, my parent is lost their sight. They can't cook now. They better get away from the knives. They better just get a microwave, and they'll have to live on the microwave. You know, that doesn't have to be the case. You know, learning just a few simple techniques will make it very easy to cook. Sight or smell, touch, hearing, they all work just fine for cooking.
Did you get my card?
So,
I sent you a card.
Labeling, there's a lot of different ways to do it. I prefer Braille, but puff paint works well. The sticky dots work well. There's lots of different ways to label. But you don't have to label every item in your kitchen. You can also tell things by size, by shape, by listening, by texture. I'm kind of a lazy labeler. I don't label every item in my fridge. I know people that do, and that's great if they want to, but you don't have to. I do label my microwave, my appliances in Braille, but there are other ways to handle that. But that can be very important. You want to have a way to work all your appliances, and you definitely want to use your appliances. You don't just want to limit yourself to the microwave now that you don't have your sight. You don't need to be afraid of heat. If you're safe about it, you can touch your items in your pans. You don't want to touch the inside of your pan. You can use the heat on your stove. You don't touch the burner, of course, but you can use the heat to guide where you're at, where your pan's at. My mother, to this day, hovers behind me as I'm cooking over the stove, if she's in the room, and goes, and that will make you a nervous wreck. If you're hovering over, if someone's hovering over you, of course that can lead to a burn or a, you know, but it's all a matter of using your technique, not being careless, concentrating in a new way, and being able to cook and experiment and enjoy cooking just like you used to. Now, if you never enjoyed cooking, then it's a matter of finding what you can cook and what will help you live and be healthy and, you know, and making it through. Technology is great. I use technology. I use my iPhone to find recipes and experiment with recipes and have fun with. I've used talking meat thermometers, and they can be a great thing. I'm looking for a way to find a talking candy thermometer because I think that would be a great thing. But I don't use technology in every aspect of cooking. I still use the old-fashioned smelling, tasting, testing, by listening, that kind of thing, those kind of old-fashioned type alternative techniques primarily in my cooking. Just keeping things really simple, measuring by touch, by, you know, feeling if the measuring cup is full, the old tried and true putting your fingertip in the cup to pour up to that level, the very simple, basic, I guess the technique I do adapt is I do put my liquids in containers like baby food jars or small plastic containers and dip metal measuring spoons in because I do find that easier than pouring. And I do keep my oil in a cold place, my vegetable oil, because I find that much easier to tell if something's full, if the oil is cold. So those are some techniques I do adapt. But my philosophy is just try to keep it simple, keep my techniques. I do touch what I'm cutting. That's another thing that drives my mom nuts. She hates to watch me cut, but I tell her not to watch. I don't cut myself any more than the average person, maybe less. I've only had one bad knife cut, and it was when I was being really careless, and I was talking to my kids and disciplining them, and I was cutting a cantaloupe, and I just made a careless cut. And I went to the doctor, and I was embarrassed to go to the doctor because I figured they were going to be like, oh my gosh, a blind person with a knife. And they were going to be out, and they were like, oh, we see lots of these kind of cuts. Here, here's some glue. And they glued it together, and it was not a big deal. So that was the next thing. So that's sort of my presentation on kind of my philosophy of cooking. I thought I would open it up to some discussion because this is really a topic that generates discussion. It's such a broad spectrum topic. There's so many different questions and topics for cooking that I thought I would open it up to discussion and questions to see where people had questions or where people might want to go with it. So I thought I would do that now.
This is Tony. Just out of curiosity, how do you know, like yesterday, I broiled a big chicken breast. Well, when I took it out, it wasn't done yet. How do you know what other, how do you know when it's done? I mean, I just put it back in and I've had it stay longer, but what techniques do you use there?
What I do is if I'm not sure, I smell it. I can tell by the smell often if it's done.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a thick one and real large and I'm not sure, I often will cut it and touch inside and to check if it still feels kind of slimy or, you know, not done inside.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah, and that's, and, you know, putting it back on and cooking it longer is definitely the best way at that point.
Robert here. You know what, ladies, what I found that really works pretty well with any kind of meat is to take my fork and then just stick it into it, because if it's cooked, the fork will go with very little resistance. If you have something that's cooked just halfway, you'll feel the fork will go through the first part of it, and then it meets resistance, because uncooked meat is pretty hard to put a fork through.
That's
so,
another good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's another really good idea.
Hello, my name is Frank. I just want to give a couple tips. One, I think it's very important to be organized, know where everything is at before you turn on the heat. Like, say, for instance, I like to use a napkin to wipe my hands every now and then, so I got to know where that napkin is, otherwise it's going to catch on fire, and or either your utensils. And another thing is timing. Timing is very good. Usually if you have access to online, they'll give you timing tips on how long to cook certain things. So if you know what temperature and time to cook it at, it's a fairly good way to cook things correctly.
Frank, that's a very good point. And the organization is really key. One thing I like to do is I like to kind of set things out in a line. Like, for instance, I have a plate for the raw food. And then I have a plate for my cooked food, because, of course, you never want to put your cooked food back on a plate that had raw food. And I have that set out, and then I have my utensils all ready. Like, you don't want to be searching for something to turn your meat with while your meat is in the pan. You want to have that all out ahead of time. And if you have that napkin or wash rag or whatever you have to wipe your hands up, you know, definitely you want to know where that is. Be really organized about it. If you're making waffles or something in the waffle iron, you can have something to measure your waffle batter. Like, I usually use a half cup measure and a plate to catch any dripping batter under that, and your plate, your bowl for your batter, you know, next to that, and then your plate for the finished waffles all lined up. So then you're not looking, you know, quickly for all that stuff.
Can I say something?
Sure. What is your name?
Hello.
What is your name?
Oh, my name is Teresa, and I'm just going blind. I'm just starting all of this.
Mm-hmm.
However, I wanted to say that I always cook with coconut oil, which is the consistency of spry, so it's much easier than pouring in a liquid into a pan. Does that
mm-hmm.
make sense?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah, that way
so
you
then,
just put a teaspoon of coconut oil and, you know, that you can touch and da-da-da, whatever, you know, and it's just easier than pouring.
I've heard that coconut oil has a lot of health benefits also.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. It is like I take a teaspoon and eat it first, and then I put it in another teaspoon in the pan, because it's good for you, for Alzheimer's, for for healing. It's really it's an excellent product. Anyway, that's all I, you know. I'm just listening because when you just start out like I am, it's scary as heck, and I'm 78, and I've had my sight all my life.
Wow.
And now all of a sudden, and I'm in my own home,
right.
And I want to
be
here.
It's a big change. It's a big change.
Well, what do you do when people give you advice that don't know what the heck they're talking about?
Ignore them.
Ignore them.
Ignore them.
Largely ignore it.
There you go. There you go.
And figure out what
Thank
works
you.
For you.
Exactly.
You know, this is Tony again. You were talking about how your mom always hovered around you in the kitchen and stuff. When I first got married, you know, my husband's in the kitchen, and I'm, you know, touching something with the pork, and he got excited, and he said, and I jumped. And I burned a hole, my whole wrist on the rim of the pan. I got to tell you,
he
never said another
alone,
word.
You'd have been okay if he'd have left you alone.
Yes, but
exactly.
He got the message. And so now anytime anybody's in my kitchen, I tell them, no matter what you see me do, you don't say a word. And if you don't like it,
That's
then you
right.
have to walk out of the kitchen.
Yeah, I just had another guy. I was thinking of putting a bump on the press on the pepper. You know, those little plastic bumps?
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm sure
all
of you know that. Yeah.
Those are great. Those bumps are great for labeling things that you're not, you know.
Were you blind since birth or was it late onset?
I was blind since birth, but I've worked with a lot of students who have been in a lot of situations that, you know, have been afraid, have gone blind later.
Uh-huh.
Anything that, you know, you're not sure what is what, those bumps are a great way to distinguish. And you'll find that you'll be able to start telling things quickly and easily. Of course, you know, one way to tell the pepper is by smell, but you don't always want to do that because, of course, it's going to make you sneeze.
Right,
so.
you can sneeze until,
But a bump is a great way, a quick way of identifying it. You know, you maybe
you
put two bumps on another spice that you want to find or
there you
you know,
go.
Anything you want
there
to
you
find
go.
Quickly.
Absolutely.
Bumps in an L shape for, or a C shape for cinnamon, you know.
Okay. There you go.
A little rubber band for another spice that you want. You know, any little quick way of labeling.
Anything that distinguishes exactly. Yep.
Exactly, and that makes it quicker for finding things quickly.
Sure, I get it. Yep.
Whatever it is for you. If you're real organized and you want to put things alphabetically in your cabinet, you're ambitious and organized, that can work too if you always put it back the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember if you don't have a lot of spices. You know, that can work for people, too.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
This is Stan. I have way too many spices to do that with. basically, I use three techniques. I have Braille labels, which I used until my Braille labeler broke, and now I don't know whether I can even get another one, but that's a different topic. And I use the Pen Friend from RNIB. It's a little bit expensive, but for labeling...
I have it.
Containers that you use over and over again, it's marvelous.
And that is.
And I wanted to mention that I also use dots on a lot of my measuring cups and things like that. And I was thinking, especially for the lady who says that she's losing her sight, what kind of resources would you recommend as a group for someone who either is just losing their sight or sick and tired of those TV dinners, whatever it happens to be, where would you start? I've been cooking for a long time, but I'd be real interested to hear people's thoughts on where would you start? What would you start to look at? Where would you go?
I would
and
start with the NFC
mute.
Chapter.
Thanks.
Whatever NFC chapter is in the area, and see if there's people who might want to get together and do like some cooking together. Or if there's some seniors that might want to get together. But a lot of times people in NFC chapters are willing to get together and help each other out cooking-wise. You can sometimes talk to, like, rehabilitation Department of Rehabilitation in the area. There's sometimes groups for seniors, like support type groups or places for people who are newly blind. But sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not. That's the problem, because sometimes they're encouraging, sometimes they're discouraging. Does anybody else have any ideas?
I was going to say the Idahoan potatoes in a package are wonderful. They're called Idahoans, and they're $1 at Target. And they're you just add water, put them in the microwave, and they are really, really, really good.
Oh, you're talking about foods to start doing? I thought you were
I'm talking about Idahoan potatoes. They're in a package, dry. And all you have to do is add water and put them in the microwave. They're wonderful.
The person who asked the question, were you asking about foods to start cooking or were you asking about resources?
Yes.
Where to learn, I think.
I was asking about resources. I basically, when I was getting my mobility training and other things as a teenager, part of it I got was some training through my vocational rehab in whatever you want to call it. That's what they used to call it in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And they did talk about doing some things in the kitchen and how to be a little bit safer. And that got me started. And that, in addition to the fact that when I started living on my own, I had to do some cooking. And I just said, you know, I'm not going to just cook packaged foods for my housemates. I'm going to start working techniques. A lot of it I did on my own and went through by trial and error. I got burned. I got disorganized. I messed up recipes. Now that I'm in my early 60s and I've been married to a fantastic cook since 1979, so a long time, now I cook at least as much as she does in the house. I'm not a baker yet, but I do a lot of the cooking. I grill outdoors. I cook on a very high heat gas range. I have double ovens. We just recently spent a fortune remodeling our kitchen so my wife and I and company can all cook together in our kitchen and not get in each other's way. And I would say anyone that's going to start out, the most important thing of anything is organization. You can't stress enough that if you're as a blind or partially sighted cook, you will be far more successful if you do your mise en place, as they call it, edit before you ever turn on a burner or turn on the oven. It's just critical.
There are some good books. One is called Label It from National Barrel Press, which talks a lot about different labeling techniques. And then another is called, I believe it's called Cooking with Feeling. And National Barrel Press, I believe, also sells that one. And it has some good techniques. I've read parts of it. It has some good alternative techniques. And that might be a place to start if somebody wants to do some reading and some experimenting.
You don't have to
read it in Braille. You can get them in like Porta Book and download them on your computer and listen to them on a computer.
This is Judy. I want to say one thing to the person who said you keep a paper towel handy and you want to make sure it's not going to start on fire. It's a good idea to keep something handy to wipe your hands on. And if you really want to make sure you don't start a fire, you might want to try a wet cloth instead.
That's what I do. I use a wet cloth.
And if you don't want to wash the wet cloths because you're really lazy like me and you don't believe in doing laundry, you can avoid it. Use the disposable handy wipes, which are thicker than paper towels. And then the other thing, I just learned about a product which I have now, and I can't use because I have the wrong pots. But if you've ever seen it, the infomercial for the Wave ovens and burners, they are the kind of burners that work with metal pots. And you know it's a metal pot and will work if you can put a magnet on the bottom of it. If you can't, then it won't work. Copper doesn't work.
Those are called induction burners. You can get them in stoves.
This is a brand that I'm talking about, though.
But the
you're right. That's probably
reduction, and there's a lot of that out there. That's starting to get a lot more popular, even with the sighted public, because
that's
efficient.
Right. These are not made for blind people, and what I want to say about them is that they work by temperature rather than high, medium, and low. And so for making candy, they'd be perfect because you press a button, it goes immediately to that temperature, and then you press the pause or off button, and it turns off immediately. And it only heats up where the pot is. So if you have a smaller pot than the burner, the part of the burner where there is no pot does not get hot.
Mm. That's neat.
It's amazing. And I can't use it because I have the wrong pots. I know. I wonder.
Now, one thing I was going to say is I've been finding more and more mainstream products that have unintentional blindness-friendly features. Like I bought some silicone measuring cups recently that had raised numbers inside them. That was really kind of funny because I've always kind of identified measuring cups by size. But these had 1/4, 1/3, 1/2, and 1 cup all raised inside them. So that was just a nice little handy feature that I wasn't even looking for. And I don't know that the company even really noticed that they put that in, but it's very handy for a blind person to have that in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello,
and there's,
Myrna?
You know, companies that are making, we get a kind of cereal that has raised, the box has this embossing stuff on the box. I always can tell it's that kind of cereal without opening it. I mean, I always have sort of opened our cereals and just checked them out, but now I never have to open that one because it's always that way and it's always raised up on the jar, you know, on the box. So that's just seeming to start happening more and more lately too, which is kind of nice because I'm really lazy about labeling things.
Hello, this is Myrna.
Yes.
I found, one of my children found measuring cups that actually have written in 1/3, 1/4, 1/2, raised on the handle. And they Oh, yeah, they got so excited, brought it home. But I also wanted to add what Robert was saying. Hello, Robert. What Robert was saying about testing your meat with a fork, which is what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've always done. I've been legally blind since birth, but I am losing more vision now. So I'm from Louisiana, and we were taught to cook, and my mother taught me to cook. Just like Jen's, you know, I was raised as a, like I said, an ordinary kid. There was no blindness included in the rearing of the child. And but what I did learn as I got older, because I do a lot of stir fry cooking, and it did take some experimentation. But if you take your stirring spoon, and you have to rely on your sense of smell. Like I said, in Louisiana, we do a lot of the Trinity, you know, the onions, peppers, and celery. So I had to learn how to not only depend on my sense of smell, but also that feel of when the vegetables were of the desired consistency to continue with what I was doing. And it does, because it takes experimentation a little bit, but it can be done. You will screw up a few times, but it can be done. Just be patient and work at it, and it'll happen. But what Robert was saying about the meat, I use the fork method myself. So, but yeah, if you can find the measuring cups, it's great. I mean, I love them. I use them all. I actually have two sets of them, one for smaller sizes, like more of the tablespoon. Even the tablespoons and the teaspoon come in with the raised, you know, 1/2 teaspoon. All I had to learn was, you know, so I didn't have to read it, and it's great. Just my suggestions. They're out there. I don't think they meant it for the blind, but hey.
No, they didn't. I'm sure they didn't.
It all
just
worked,
happened.
You know.
Because if they meant it for the blind, it'd be like double the price.
Probably so.
This is Barb Fole. I had another suggestion for the, you know, wiping your hands and keeping organized and all that. You can run yourself a sink full of soapy water, and then, you know, as you use that cooking spoon, you can, you know, put it into the, wash it immediately and wipe your hands
too
that way.
I had a
question about the induction burners. How does it know that it's fudge that it needs to heat up? Do you have one button for the fudge and one for the potatoes?
No, it doesn't. No, you have to know that part. But the thing is, you can turn it off immediately.
4501 West 100 seconds.
Okay. So it wasn't that you had a separate button for the fudge. You just had to know how long to...
I don't think so. There is a program button and a timer button on it. But I don't know enough about it yet to answer that question. I don't know what that means or what it does.
Not the high school, that's the first one, but then further down.
So stay tuned. If I learn, I'll, you know, report it.
Okay, thank you.
This is Teresa. Can I ask a dumb question?
Sure.
No, we don't have
no question is a dumb question. We don't have any dumb questions.
How do you know which end of the knife is sharp when you're cutting something without putting your hand and cutting it?
Well,
you know,
the handle of the knife usually feels.
Hi, this is
different.
Dan.
Sure.
Yep.
I think Jennifer was going to answer.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just saying that usually the knife handle feels very different. I mean, often it's wooden or plastic, and usually the handle feels very different than the blade.
On the bottom part,
so,
you mean on the cutting part?
Right.
Okay. Okay.
So
yeah, she's
usually,
right.
Go ahead. So that's
Robert here. So Robert here. So if it's a serrated, you know, edge, of course, I just run the side of the knife that I pick up across the surface of the fork that I'm going to be using.
Oh, there you go.
Working.
Yep.
So that's one way.
Yep, I can tell.
Back.
Yep.
But I was going to say another couple things. You know, the salt and pepper shaker guys. Pick them up sometime. The salt is always heavier than the pepper. So
right.
One,
exactly.
I want to mention, this is Stan again. I want to mention something about the knives. One of the things that will help you a lot with dealing with knives, and I've got a lot of them, very sharp, take your time. Don't be in a hurry. Also, I recommend that if you get yourself either a knife block or a knife drawer and store the particular knives that you might use for particular purposes in a definite place and always put them back there.
Mm-hmm.
And that
really
cuts down on accidents.
Yeah, and when you put them in the dishwasher, I always put my knives point down, handle up, and so then when I pick them back up, or if I'm washing my dishes by hand, I put my knives downward in another container. But I always know that that's what I'm washing when I'm washing them so I don't get a nasty surprise.
Exactly. Or blood in your food.
So, Robert here, I was going to tell you another one that maybe some of you guys have gotten onto. But we were talking about pouring earlier, which, of course, is kind of a shaky thing when you first start out with your vision going bad, but it gets better with practice. But what I was going to say is Jennifer was talking about when she's going to be using a liquid and she will put her finger down inside, you know, the little half cup or whatever she wants to get a half a cup of, let's say. She'll have her part of her finger down inside there and then pour your liquid into there. And then when you feel that liquid touch your finger, then you stop. Well, I've had a couple of people say, well, how do you do that when, you know, the liquid is, it's room temperature, you can't feel the darn thing until it runs over. So what a couple of ladies that I knew told me that it's a really nifty trick is take whatever the liquid is beforehand and put it in the refrigerator for a little while. So then it's definitely a different temperature than, you know, the room that you're going to be pouring in. So anyway, so that's just a funny little trick that she
was telling
me.
Yep, that's what I do with my vegetable oil.
Yeah, that's really good. I know one other person that puts a pump inside their oil bottle that they get. And they've learned that, you know, like three pumps is a certain amount, two pumps is whatever. So that's what kind of a nifty idea.
This is Shelley. Another thing to do is when you're pouring liquids like that is to keep it over the sink. If you're at all questioning, you could either put a saucer or a bowl underneath a measuring cup or whatever, but to do it over the sink. That way you're not going to just dump it all, especially new people at trying this, then you're not going to take a chance on it running all over the counter or something.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
I've got a thought that no one's mentioned yet. This is Rick. Do not get over-concerned about exact measurements. You know, when I make a lot of risotto and it calls for half a cup of this and a half a cup of that, I just cut up the onions and cut up the peppers, and I don't worry about the measuring it. So I think we can get too hyper about being exact. Same thing with the oil and vinegar and salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, except when it comes to baking. You really do have to.
Another idea, this is Shelley again, on the knife issue, is the handle of a knife, if you're holding it in such a position that it you're getting ready to cut with it, the top of the handle of the knife can extend down kind of like almost a trigger. And so that's a way to know whether the knife is right side up or upside down.
Okay.
That
should
be pointing down.
Mm-hmm. Robert, I need you to take over for about 5 minutes. I have to run and grab my son real fast.
I think people are doing well. So keep all the suggestions, guys. What else? Who else? Something else on their mind?
This is Tony talking about the knives again. A lot of the knife handles also, you know, have the little grooves where your fingers would sit. And if you're holding it that way, you know your blade is down.
You know you're doing right. Yeah.
This is Judy. If the curved part is facing the floor or the table, and the top part is facing the ceiling, then you have it right.
Okay.
What are you doing, sleep? Wake up! I see you. Wake up! Wake up, dog.
One of the things we might want to do is remind people about muting so we won't hear you telling us to wake up. If you press *6, then we won't be listening to you do that.
That would be good. Yeah, another thing that we haven't talked about, we've talked about an awful lot of the non-visual alternative techniques, but again, just like the lady here that was talking about how it's something that's new for her, so she still has some usable vision. And this is kind of a common sense that some of us get on to right away and some of us have to learn it. But if you have any kind of remaining vision that you can use, when you're in the kitchen or just wherever, make sure you make your maximum use of color contrast. So if you're going if you're going to be working with some utensils, depending on their color, you might want to lay them down on a white cloth or a placemat or on a dark one so that they stand out visually. You know, that's just something that, you know, sometimes we need to be reminded about to begin with. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to, this is Teresa again, I have to learn Braille, and I am scared to death to try and learn that.
Well, this is Judy. I would say, what's the worst thing that could happen to you once you start trying?
I guess I get the wrong dog.
It doesn't bite. It doesn't hurt. It'll be frustrating sometimes, but it's just, frustrating is not scary, it's just frustrating. So then you throw something and you go on.
Hi, this is Tricia from New Jersey. Can I make a comment?
Sure.
Yes, ma'am.
I am just learning Braille myself, and I didn't want to do it. I'm doing it for work purposes. My boss had asked me to do it. So I called up Hadley and then went online, and I'm learning Braille Literacy 1, and it's not scary at all. It actually winds up being a lot of fun. And it's going to be very helpful for you when you get into your kitchen and have to start labeling things. Believe me when I tell you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, go for it. It'll open up a whole new world for you, really.
I need a new world opening.
Jim from New Mexico.
Yes.
I learned Braille at age 65. I'm now 75.
Oh, good for you.
And I started learning grade 1 at age 65, and I liked it. I needed it because my vision was really going south, and so I learned it, and then I started some courses at Hadley, and I'm a grade 2 writer and reader now.
Wow,
excellent.
Congratulations. That's great.
Wow, that's pretty good.
We should remind people, if anybody's up for an adventure and you're new to this and you haven't started yet, we have a convention the National Federation of the Blind does in Orlando, and our seniors group will have two activities, one on July 1st and one on July 3rd, but you can stay the whole week, and we can promise that your life will change for the better.
For sure.
In, and you'll meet people, hopefully from your own state, that when you go home you'll have friends to. You can check the NFB website for people in your community as well. You can call our national office and find out about groups that might be available.
This is Shelley in South Carolina. I know that a lot of our seniors have learned Braille through Hadley recently and in the last year.
Okay, can I stop you right there? What is Hadley?
Hadley School for the Blind is a school in Winnetka, Illinois, that that does correspondence courses for individuals that want to learn blindness skills or parenting or hobbies or academic information, and they do it all by correspondence.
Or Braille.
Okay. It's a wonderful program.
It's also all free. Everything is free that you do with Hadley, and they send you everything by mail. And you're working with an actual instructor.
It's spelled H-A-D-L-E-Y.
But you would have to know Braille to read it.
No.
They teach you Braille.
No.
That's one of their courses.
They teach it, and you get the materials either in large print or a disc or cassette or something like that or whatever. It you get it in different formats. It does not have to just be in Braille. But that's one place you can learn Braille.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to mention something about Braille, and I am not a good Braille user. And I was not taught this when I learned what I learned. There's only 10 different letters.
Oh, okay.
What?
And you know what a cell is? That's the 6 potential dots you have. 2 columns of 3, that's 6 dots. Well, there's only 10 variations, 10. And I think any of you can remember 10.
Well, what about the ABC?
Actually, no.
A through J is the 10
letters. 10 numbers.
And then K through T are the next 10. But the only difference is you got a dot in the third position. So it's the same 10 letters, but you got one more dot.
None of that's going to make sense till you start to see it.
You got to forget W because W was not in the French alphabet, and it's weird.
Okay.
So don't worry about it.
Okay.
And then U through Z is 5 more dots. And then the next 5 are combinations like and, for, if, of, but. I mean, they're different. In other words, if you have and is a.
This might be more
and is an A. Anyway,
I think this is Stan. I think this is really great, but can we get back to cooking?
Yeah, let's do that.
There you go.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
This is Denise. I have a question. A cooking question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, it's Denise in Maryland. And I was just wondering about if anyone has any tricks about cooking pancakes. When I was sighted, I loved and I still love pancakes, but when I was able to cook them when I was sighted, I could see when one side was bubbling and then I would know it was time to flip it over and then I could see that side was brown and, you know, everything was sighted, and I just don't know how to do it now. So all I'm doing now is eating microwave pancakes, and they are absolutely not the same thing.
This is Shelley. On that note, you can actually hear the bubbles. If you pay attention, you can hear the bubbles, and you can lift up the very edge of the pancake with a spatula, feel underneath just lightly, and you can tell whether it's set up or not. You can feel the brownness of it.
Yep, and when it's set up, then you're ready to flip it right over. And you have to be
the brownness of it is kind of textured feeling, right?
Right, it's a little harder.
When I first started doing pancakes, I wasn't patient enough, and I would flip them too soon, and then they'd turn all gloppy.
Well, I guess I should just you know, kind of get tough with myself and just go ahead and try it.
That's what you need to do.
And another thing is you might time it, you know, count to 10 or something and then flip it over or something like that. I mean, there would be probably other ways you could do it, but if you've done it by vision and with the bubbles, you can hear the bubbles.
Yeah, you know, you get so used to being able to see the bubbles that you might be hearing it and you don't even realize you're hearing it because you're seeing it.
This is Tony.
Do you use the medium heat or I guess I used to use them. It's been so long. Are you just using the same degree of And this is for gas.
You might start a little lower just for the sake of kind of testing your wings at it, but I wouldn't start a lot lower. You'll actually be able to do them better if you keep it at a more medium heat.
And I'd start one pancake at a time.
This is Tony.
One pancake at a time so I don't waste too much.
Well, no, because it's easier to flip them. When you're not used to them, it's easier to flip it and know when it's done if you're doing one at a time, just when you're starting. When you get good at it and you're used to it, then you might want to do more. But I found
that
learning, it's easier to do one at a time.
The other thing I would suggest that it takes practice to learn how to flip. And what I would suggest doing is, you know, on a cold skillet in a fry pan, take a piece of bread and practice flipping with a spatula.
Oh, good idea!
And get that technique down.
Because the time to learn that technique is not while the pancake's in the skillet.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, this is Jana from Connecticut. I was just going to say, I time it. I figured like about 2.5 minutes for the first side, and then I turn it, you know, then you put the spatula gently underneath it, and you can feel that it glides underneath when it's done enough on the bottom, and then you flip it. I also do one pancake at a time because I'm afraid to do more than one.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Ann in North Carolina.
Go ahead.
Hello. Yes.
Go ahead.
Getting back to the measuring cups, I like to know where the listeners, the callers, got those measuring cups from. I'm very interested in getting some with the raised numbers on it and the measuring spoons.
I wonder if the Independence Market doesn't sell some.
I know I got some at Target, the silicone ones that had raised numbers in them.
Great.
They were just at Target.
Okay.
And I I didn't notice when I bought them. They were just, I like them because they go flat.
Yeah.
To store. And I liked that feature. But then when I got them home, when I pushed them up into cups, I noticed they had raised numbers in them. But someone on this call said they found ones with the raised numbers on the lid, the handle. I don't know where she got them.
Oh, I would like to know that also.
But I think her children found them just at a regular department store, too. Maybe the Kitchen Collection, if you have one of those around, I would check there, or Crate and Barrel, or
Walmart.
Like any Walmart,
This is Myrna. My kids found the ones with the numbers that were, like, I don't even want to say was not embossed. They were, like, raised. Like, they were brailed onto the handle, pretty much. But, yeah, they found those at Walmart. You do have to look for them. They may not be available, but Walmart and other department stores that do, say, really maybe restaurant supply stores, you can find them. But these have one and then the, you know, your I call them hashtags now, / quarter, and it'll say cup, and it's on the handle. Some you can find that have them on the cup itself, but these, the ones that I have, and they're kind of like a hard, almost like a silicone kind of plastic. They're a hard cup, and they're on the handle.
So I want to put a word in for Tupperware.
You can maybe find them, but I think my kids found those at Walmart.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Tupperware stacks very nicely, and then you know the one on the bottom is one cup.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and these also have flat bottoms, too. So if you are pouring, it's a lot easier because they do have flat bottoms.
Tupperware does have their on the bottom, too.
Yep.
The Tupperware
yep.
measuring cup set, they have like one cup, one-third cup, two-thirds cup on the very bottom of them raised. Because I have a nice Tupperware set that's like that.
But like I said, try Walmart, try other stores. It may take a while to find them, but they are out there. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
I know it helps me.
Well, can I say something about the measuring cups?
Sure.
I have three metal ones. I have a cup, a half cup, and a quarter cup. And I turn them upside down in a drawer. I know the top is a cup. I know the middle one is a half, and I know the bottom is a quarter.
That works, too.
Yep.
And by stacking them inside each other, too, that's another way.
Exactly. So you always know the cup is on top.
Yep.
And
well,
so I put them upside.
Exactly the opposite because mine are right side up, but the same principle works.
Same principle.
Sure.
Works. Sure.
Just so you know.
I do that, too. I nest them.
Yep.
I do
this
the
is
same
George.
Thing.
Can you hear me?
Know their labels.
Yes.
I do the same thing.
We can hear you, George.
George.
Okay.
George?
I have a comment and a question to the lady that was looking for networking resources. I agree that NSB chapters are a very good source, but another one is your local senior center. A lot of them are getting more and more people losing sight, and they have
mm-hmm.
networking groups at the senior centers.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a question. I was looking the other day for a tape that I could use in my stylus to do labeling, and I used to use this 3/8-inch really thick stuff, which was wonderful in the stylus. But all I've been able to find lately is this half-inch stuff that's about as thick as Scotch tape. Do they still sell that real thick 3/8-inch stuff that you can work with in your stylus and punch Braille on it?
Yeah. Yeah, you can get it at the Independence Market.
Independence Market.
Yeah, call NFB.
I use a Scotch brand tape, and it does come in about a 3/4 inch. I think it's enough for one line of Braille, but you have to get the, don't get a cheap brand. Get the regular Scotch brand, and that, I find that it works well.
This is Tony. You can probably get them, because I get it to get them too. You can get them at an office supply store.
Okay. So I was trying at a hardware store and
an office supply store would be more like where you'd find it.
I got a pen from the NFB market, and it was less than $10.
You can also get Dymo labeling tape that's the stuff you're talking about, that's hard plastic with the stuff you peel off the back of it at any kind of a office supply type place. You can get that tape. It may be colored. It's not.
Yeah, it's colored.
No,
it's not.
Colors don't matter to me.
Yeah.
Well, as long as I can read Braille off it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can get the clear at Independence Market.
Yes. Yeah.
This is Judy. I want to say a word about support groups at senior centers. They can be great, but they work better for you if you understand and feel okay about yourself as a blind person. Because what they tend to do...
I think it's broken.
What?
Keep talking.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, what they tend to do is to reinforce our feeling sorry for ourselves because they don't understand blindness. So if you're going to go to your senior support group, go as an advocate for what blind people can do and be prepared to lead the way on that.
Good point.
Yes. Yeah. None of us need help feeling sorry for ourselves.
Nope.
On the other hand, I'm the Adjustment to Vision Loss Coordinator for New Jersey, and I work with seniors throughout. And we have over 40 support groups, and we reinforce positive thinking. And don't come, it's not a big pity party. We can do it, and, you know, it's very, very positive. And you can make the groups very positive, too, on the other hand. So they're not all big, little pity parties. Just wanted to add that in.
Good for you.
Good.
Thank you.
Chris, I have a question about neuropathy and using my fingers for the touch. So would the fork be the best way to do that, to tell if my meat's done?
I would guess so.
Okay.
Yeah, fork and sound. Have all of you noticed that meat tends to sort of spit at you when it's done, and it also kind of whistles?
Oh.
I never noticed that.
The other thing is it doesn't seem to fry. It changes how, you know, how hard it's doing its thing, you know? When you first put it in there, it's really making a lot of racket, and once it's pretty much finished, you don't hear it very much because there's no more stuff coming out of it.
Well, it starts out loud, it gets quiet, and then it gets loud again when it's...
Yeah, this is Stan. It really depends on what you're cooking.
Well, that's true.
I'm going to make a plug, at least for larger pieces of meat. There is a good talking thermometer from ThermoPen that you can get, and it's only about $40, and I use it all the time. Now, I know for some people that might seem a little expensive, but it does work, and then you know you're absolutely right. For a lot of things I cook, I don't want to guess. I want to know. So, for example, if I'm cooking a big chicken breast, I want to know when it's 160 or 165. And there are devices for those who have iPhones. There's a wonderful device called the iGrill, and I use it all the time. And it's a little difficult to set up, but it's fully accessible with VoiceOver on the iPhone and the iPad, and it uses Bluetooth, so you don't have to connect it to your phone. And again, it with temperature probes, and you can use it in temperature ranges from, I don't remember what the low is, but it'll go all the way up, accurately all the way up to 400 degrees. And you can use it in a pot, you can use it in a grill, all kinds of things. And for those that can afford it, it's about $100. It works really well after you get it set up.
Where did you get it from?
I bought mine from the Apple store, but I don't know if they still sell it. But if you Google it, iGrill, I-G-R-I-L-L, you can probably start to find it places online. And
that does work well? I've been wanting to get to that, but I'm not sure if it works.
After you get it set up, which is pairing it to your phone or your iPad through the Bluetooth, the app itself on the phone or the iPad works really well, and the device works really well.
Great. That's awesome. This is Shelley again. I was going to say, too, with the fork technique, you can also feel, and it depends, I suppose, on the neuropathy, but you can feel the fork if you've got it in hamburgers or whatever. That's how you can tell they're done in the middle, is to just stick a fork in them. But if they're, you put it in something that's sizzling, you can feel the vibration through the fork handle. So sometimes that can be helpful information when you're cooking.
Mm-hmm. As well as the smell of the meat, the feel of the meat.
Correct.
Ground beef especially really smells different when it's cooked versus when it's raw. But also the sound of it and the feel of it is very, very different.
Right.
So there's not much time left here on this call. So any other hot questions that we haven't touched on? These are just an hour.
This is Joanne from Georgia. I wanted to, if anyone could tell me how they label their canned goods or if they use the devices to read the barcode scanner.
This is Tony. You can buy the Dymo tape that's also magnetic.
Okay.
And I put them, I mean, I have a lazy Susan, so I don't stack the stuff. I just put the magnet, you know, I braille whatever it is, and I put it on top of the lid, and because it has a little bit of magnet, it just sticks there.
Okay. Do you know braille, Joanne?
I know enough to do my labeling and all of that, so that's what I do. And then with recipes, because I'm always wanting to try different things, I go up on the Internet and research, you know, different recipes, and I can use my computer for that. And also if I buy anything in the store and I don't know the directions, I'll just look up the item from the food manufacturer for that item and get the directions that way.
You know, one good thing about the pen friend, I haven't done this yet, but you could take your labels to the store, and when you're buying things, put the label on right there.
Oh, okay. I've done that with my magnetic stuff, too. As if I'm buying a lot of different kinds of things, I've taken it to the store and labeled
braille,
it canned.
Yes, if you can braille it in the store, that's
no. Okay. I have them brailled because because they're magnetic.
You bring them along.
Yeah, you can reuse them over and over and over again.
But the nice thing about the pen friend is, if you need directions, if you have a good shopper and they'll read you the direction, you have it. You can have them read it on the pen friend label. And then put it on the box or the thing right there. And then you can reuse those labels. I had a friend that had the pen friend, and she would, instead of putting the label on the item, because they're sticky, she'd put it on like a little card, and then she would rubber band it to the item, and then she could reuse that label over and over with the directions on it.
I thought
that was kind of smart, so she could reuse it, you know, if she was buying boxes of, I don't know, macaroni and cheese or whatever, and then she'd just rubber band that card to the next box of that item or cake mix or whatever, and she'd reuse that pen friend label with the directions on it.
And as you empty whatever that container is, you save that card, of course, and that's the start of your next grocery list.
Exactly. That was the other thing she used it for. That was the other thing she did. She then, you know, pen friend her grocery list, that, you know, and write those things down.
Great. Denise, very quickly, North what
Carolina.
Is pen friend?
It's a product, and it's sold by, is it RNIB?
Well, yeah, but you don't buy it from RNIB here. You buy it either from the independence market or
market.
Independent Living Aid.
Right.
Charleston,
and it's,
North Carolina.
It looks like a little pen and feels like a little pen, but it is a product that you can record information onto little labels that you can then stick onto anything, really. And you can record for a long time. I don't know. Is there a time limit on the labels?
Probably. I'm not sure.
I don't know. But you can record a lot of information. And so it can be as short as like a can label or as long as a memo and stick those labels onto your product.
Then you hold the pen after you've recorded on it. You hold the pen on the label. You turn it on. Hold the pen on the label, and you hear what you've recorded later.
You hear what you recorded, exactly.
Right.
Or someone else has recorded if you want.
Well, you
know,
yeah,
to
you
read
hear
something
whatever
or
is
say
recorded.
Something.
And you can re-record over them if you
right.
want to change it, because it's an MP3 player inside it. And also with them, you can take your labels and cut them in half. So if you want to label CDs and the jacket they go in, you only have to record it once. Cut the label, and you can use it in both things.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They
that's
also have
cool.
another product, and I can't remember the company off the top of my head, which has tactile labels, so they're not just flat. I'm waiting for one that's been ordered. For people who have diabetes and have a hard time feeling the labels with a pen friend, because they're smaller than a penny. The small labels are smaller than a penny. So I recommend putting them on cardboard, luggage tags, something where you can reuse them. You could put them on magnets, though, for cans.
You could.
And move them around your cans as need be. But this other device is supposed to work better for people who, you know, can't feel the other labels. However, I have recorded and been able to play through a bump dot. They've been clear bump dots that I put on one of the dots. I did have difficulty with that the other day, so I don't know how long it'll last. But they also have some that will go through the laundry now, so that you can label your clothes with dots and put them through the laundry, and I can't remember how many washings they're supposed to go through the washer and dryer.
You also, there are now pen friend clothes labels.
Right.
You can, you know, put more color labels on.
So it's a very
expensive. It
is now almost 5 minutes after 3, so we're going to have to be slowing down, cutting,
wrap this up, I think.
Sure.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Great talking to all of you.
Thank you very much.
I think it's been very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your input and discussion. It would not have worked without all of that, so thank you so much. Thank you for bearing with me. I'm sorry I had to run in and out a little bit. I have to take my kids to an appointment today that I unfortunately made long ago, and it sort of conflicted with this, so sorry about that.
Do you have a
can
website
I ask one
that
question?
We can get in touch when you're going to do this again?
The answer to that is probably at the senior division meeting in Orlando. We will discuss this, and yes, we'll definitely do them again, but the schedule and topics have not yet been chosen.
Okay, thank you.
But we'll send out notices.
Now, there was a gentleman.
Well, thank you, Jennifer.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer.
Was there somebody from North Carolina that had a question?
Charles, I just had a comment. Getting back to measuring cups and spoons real quickly.
I know
you guys discussed it.
I need to end the call, though.
Okay. Goodbye.
Sorry.
Well, okay. I thought I'd give him a chance.
I know. It's just that I don't know if these are timed for
Thank you.
By the phone company.
Okie doke. Thanks. Bye.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
End of conference call.
Hello.